This is the 2014 Pacific Northwest School of the Prophets. Brother Jim Cowie is our study leader on the theme, The Kingdom of God versus the Kingdom of Men. Yahweh will destroy Nimrod. This is session number 12, The Beast of the Earth, the Sea and the Earth. Brother Jim.
Well, thank you, Brother David, and brethren, we're going to have a look now at Revelation 13 and the beast of the sea and the beast of the earth. Very important stages in the development of Catholicism and the power that Christ will destroy, because, of course, it all comes from Nimrod, and as our studies are showing, Yahweh will ultimately destroy Nimrod and all that belongs to him. Now, in an overview of what Revelation 13 is about, this map will demonstrate where the beast of the sea and the beast of the earth can be found. Now, the very facts suggest what they are, because the beast of the sea, and the sea here is obviously the Mediterranean Sea. That's the centre of operations of our God. So the beast of the sea is a power in this Mediterranean region, and we're going to see what that is. And the beast of the earth, of course, is a reference to Europe. The beast of the earth has its power centred there in Europe. So we're going to see the development of the Roman Catholic system now, of course, has become the state religion. We're going to see the development of that over the course of history between the time when the barbarians come and the sixth imperial head is wounded, and that's the language of Revelation 13, it's wounded but not killed. And then it's revived after 60 years of Gothic rule, and then the system goes through a couple of stages in which we end up with the Holy Roman Empire in the year 800 AD. So that's what this chapter is about. We'll try and make it as simple as possible. We're not going to go into all of the convolutions and, you know, the nitpicking little things, but we will try and get to the bottom of it. So let's have a look at our chart again. Now this is the big chart, and we've been considering the story of the dragon in Revelation chapter 12 and how things unfold. We're going to move then to this section of the chart. And let's just put it up here in a slightly larger form. So here we were, Revelation 12, the Roman dragon, pagan, then Christian under Constantine. Here we are in Revelation 13 verses 1 to 10. We have the beast of the sea, which is Rome in development, AD 493 AD to 800 AD, showing the eclipse of the imperial system, its rejuvenation of the Justinian epoch, 554 AD, giving papal privileges. And the beast of the earth, Revelation 13 verses 11 to 18, the beast of the earth, an image of the beast. We want to talk, did you notice this depiction? That there's a lamb-like creature with a lion-like mouth with two horns, but there's an image behind it. You see that? Now that's the image of the beast of the earth. And we're going to see what that image is. The image of the beast of the earth is actually the political power of the papacy. That's why you see, what you see there in that imagery is the shadow, as it were, behind this other lamb-like beast. That's the image of the beast. It's the papal system with political power, which they got from the Eastern Empress. And we're going to see that when we talk about the decrees of Justinian and then the decrees of Phocas. Two Eastern emperors who were ruling what was left of the Roman Empire in the East. Because when the barbarians took the western part of the empire in the East continued. It continued from the time Constantine took his capital there, 324 AD, until the Turks came along in May 1453. So that's a fair time after, isn't it? From 324 to 1453. That's how long the Eastern Empire continued. But the West went through this situation that we're going to talk about, where the imperial system based in Rome was wounded, and then it was revived, and the Eastern emperors, by stages through Justinian and Phocas, gave the papacy in the West political power. And he ends up with what we call temporal power. Now, temporal power is where you rule over people and their lands, like having a government. All right? Temporal power is political power, where you've got people and land. That's what the papacy becomes. We're going to find, of course, that the next stage of this is Daniel 7, verse 8. The three horns are plucked up. This is the story of the development of the Holy Roman Empire. And that's very important in relation to the ultimate destruction of this system, because you can demonstrate from Daniel chapter 7 that the papal system, at least the papacy and the beast that supports it, will be destroyed in the year 2060. What year are we in now? How many years is it to 2060? 46. How many years in the Jubilee period between the return of Christ to raise the dead and the full establishment of the kingdom? 50. Just mull on that for a while, because later on in today we're going to talk about that, how important that date is for you and me. And just make it clear in your mind that I am not going to suggest to you any year on which Christ will return. I've been accused of it. I don't do it. It's necessary to understand what Daniel 7 is saying and to properly interpret it. We're not going to nominate a year of the return of Christ. But we will make it plain that 2060 is the year of the demise of the papacy. Work that out for yourself. And we'll do a bit of that later on today, God willing. So you've got a bit of a picture then of what the content of Revelation 13 is about. Verses 1 to 10, beast of the sea. Verses 11 to 18, beast of the earth. Two stages of the development of papal power in the earth. And it's important to note that the last major acquisition of papal power came in the year 800 AD. That's the last major acquisition of papal power. And every time in history, as we're going to see later on today, every time in history that the Pope gains power of some kind, it always terminates in 1260 years. It has never failed, down to the little things that the Pope got control of. They always terminate in 1260 years. And if you're a mathematician, you will add 1260 to 800. And you'll come out to 2060. Okay? So that's where we're going to go this afternoon. But for the time being, we're now going to focus on this beast. The beast of the sea. So let's start in verse 1 of Revelation 13. John says, I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And we'll stop there and just analyse the content of this verse. The sea here, as we said, symbol for the nations, clearly a reference to the Mediterranean Sea. So it's taking us back to Daniel 7, verses 1 to 3. You remember when Daniel saw the four beasts, they rose up out of the sea, the Mediterranean Sea. Well, the situation in history here is that the Mediterranean seaboard, at the time when this prophecy is going to be fulfilled, had been divided among barbarian nations. Barbarian nations had divided the Roman Empire up through, of course, the 4th and 5th centuries, the years 300 through to 400 AD. So this laid the foundations of what we see today, the divided Europe. This word beast here in verse 1, therion, means a wild beast. And of course, a wild beast in the scripture is a symbol of a vicious power. And you can go back and have a look at Proverbs 28:15, Daniel 7:17, and other passages. The seven heads, as we saw in our previous study, represents the seven forms of Roman government through its history. When John received the apocalypse, it was the imperial form of government that was extant. The ten horns that we see on this beast, these are the ten horns of Daniel 2 and Daniel 7 verse 7. It's all about the barbarian division of the empire and the ten nations that emerged out of that. And you'll notice in a moment they've got crowns on their heads, so they're independent monarchies. Now, I want to just pause there, because I'm often asked by young brethren, I think most of you are further down the track than this, but I'm often asked by young brethren who are very keen to understand the apocalypse whether they should start with the apocalypse, and my answer is no. Start with Daniel. If you do not have Daniel under your belt, you are greatly handicapped when you come to the apocalypse. You need to have Daniel at least partly worked out, better fully worked out, but partly worked out before you come to do any really detailed study of the apocalypse. And I think most of you would agree with that. You know, one of the challenges that I make to young brethren is this. If you have understood and nailed down Brother Thomas's book, The Exposition of Daniel, once called Anatolia, then you've got prophecy by the throat. And if you've read the Exposition of Daniel or attempted to read it, you'll know that that's no easy task. Exposition of Daniel was actually a series of public lectures that Brother Thomas gave to people who were not Christadelphians, and those lectures each went 2 hours. And if you understand that book, you've got prophecy nailed down. That is how far they were ahead of us. Even people in the world, that's how far they were ahead of us when it came to prophecy in the mid-1800s. It was written in 1854. So there's a challenge for you. You need to have Daniel worked out pretty well before you start the apocalypse, because it all comes. The apocalypse all comes from the Old Testament, and especially the book of Daniel when it comes to these symbols that are being used here. So these crowns, the diademata, the diadems that are referred to at the end of verse 1, and upon his horns 10 crowns. A crown, of course, is a symbol of authority and self-government. And this is about the 10 barbarian kingdoms that were formed on the body politic of the Roman Empire. When the barbarians came down in successive waves and they broke it up one by one, they formed their own nations, their own independent monarchies. Verse 2 goes on to say this, "And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority." Now the dragon here, of course, is the power belonging to Constantinople. This is the Eastern Empress. That's when you need to understand. Dragon equals Constantinople. So what about this, the characteristics of this particular beast that arises from the sea? Well, he's like a leopard and a bear and a lion. Well, hang on, this sounds like Daniel to me. Daniel chapter 7. Well, of course it is. It's Daniel 7, 1 to 6. Because Rome combined all the characteristics of the former empires. The dragon, as I said, is the military power of Rome, of the Roman Empire, based in Constantinople, as we saw in chapter 12. And the Eastern Empress gave power, the ability to perform, to this beast. And the seat, that is a throne. So it was the Eastern Emperors that promoted the political power of the papal system in the West. That's what this is about, the development of papal power in the West. So when you have a look at Daniel chapter 7, go from 2 to 7, you've got these four beasts that match the four parts of the image of Nebuchadnezzar. And then you come to Revelation chapter 13, you have a beast rising up out of the sea with the characteristics of the four beasts of Daniel chapter 7. All right? So that's why it's important to have your roots in Daniel fully worked out. It says he gave him great authority, or exousia, permission, delegated authority, it means. So that's what the Eastern Empress gave to the papacy in the West. But you see, they had a problem. And the problem was caused by the barbarian invasions, because the Roman government of the West came to an end through those barbarian invasions. And that's why it says in verse 3, "And I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after this beast." Now, the one of his heads, of course, is a reference to one of the forms of government. And the form of government referred to here was that which the barbarians overthrew, the imperial form of government. And we saw those seven forms of Roman government, the regal, consular, dictatorial, etc., coming down to the sixth form, the imperial form. When the barbarians came along, they finally introduced what was called Gothic rule. Okay, the imperial had been there from BC 31, but it ended in AD 476. It's the subject. This wounded head is this sixth imperial head. It's the subject of verse 3. Well, it's going to be healed. It had the appearance of death, but actually recovered. It appeared as though it had been wounded to death. But it wasn't wounded to death. It was going to recover. It was Odosa, king of the Heruli, who in 476 put an end effectively to the imperial form of government. And finally, in 493, Gothic rule was imposed on Italy by Theodoric, king of the Ostrogoths, or Eastern Goths. Thus, the seventh head of government was formed in Italy. Gothic rule, which was based on Roman forms, was supported by the emperor in Constantinople and continued for about 60 years. But then things changed, and that's what this prophecy is about. This is about the re-emergence of the imperial form of government in the West, because it says his deadly wound was healed. And in the Greek, literally, it means having been slain, that is, by a stroke. And though Christian, the seventh form of government, the Goths, they opposed the Catholics on doctrinal grounds over the Trinity. They were Arians, most of the Goths. So this seventh form, the Gothic form, didn't really go down too well with the apostate church, because they were non-Trinitarian. So they wanted to get rid of them. And this is what happened. There was a healing of the sixth head, the imperial form of government, because the Bishop of Rome induced the Eastern Emperor, Justinian, to invade Italy in 535. And after a series of campaigns, by 544, Gothic rule ended in Italy, and Constantinople revived the imperial head, which ruled from Ravenna, which is on the east side of the peninsula of Italy, not on the western side like Rome. Rome was actually relegated to a city of the second rank, but the situation did release the papal throne from subjection to a sovereign temporal power. It's the beginning of a new era in Catholic history. The sixth head, the imperial, was revived, but now in a religious form. And that's why it says at the end of this verse, verse 3, "And all the world wondered after the beast." Now this word "world" here is the Greek word "gi." It actually means earth, and the RV renders it the earth. That is, it's a reference to the Roman Empire. So there's going to be the development of this papal system with political power that is going to bring all of the Roman world under its control. That's what this is talking about. The world wondered, or the earth, the Roman earth wondered after this beast as it rose to power. Word power, exousia, delegated authority. Brother Thomas says a license to practice. That's how he renders that particular word or phrase. A license to practice their religion without hindrance from anybody. Now we read in verse 5. There was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. Now, we're back to where we were at the beginning. 42 months, 3.5 years. 1260 days working on the principle of 360 days in a year. The Babylonian system, by the way. Okay, so we're back to this period of 1260 years. Which can be dated from the decree of Justinian, the Eastern Emperor, who wrote his decrees between 529 and 533 in support of the Pope in the West, down to the French Revolution, 1789 to 1793. So if you add 1260 to 529, you get 1789. If you add 1260 to 533, you get 1793. The French Revolution began in 1789, it reached its height in the Reign of Terror in 1793. By 1793, most of the priests in France were either dead or evicted. Most of the churches had been looted or burnt. Catholic rule in France was gone. France was the elder son of the church. So you see, this period of 1260 years, 42 months, played out exactly in history. From the time Justinian wrote his decrees, called the Justinian Decretals, giving the Bishop of Rome power, political power in Europe, from that time to the French Revolution was exactly 1260 years. It has never, ever failed. Now, someone might say, but you know, we use the Gregorian calendar. Well, we do. The Gregorian calendar was invented by Pope Gregory the 13th. It's as wonky as the Catholic system. But it doesn't matter what calendar you use because years are the same length, aren't they? It doesn't matter what calendar you use, providing you stay within that calendar. So using the Gregorian calendar from 529, you add 1260, you get to 1789. And you'll see it actually works perfectly every single time. Because there are other dates, aren't there? From 549 to 554, when Justinian's pragmatic sanction, giving Pope control of municipal and provincial governments, down to 1809, Napoleon's annexation of the Papal States, is another period of 1260 years. So when Justinian makes his pragmatic sanction, add 1260, it terminates. From 608, when Phocas, and anybody know a bit of history of Phocas? He should never have been the emperor of the Eastern Empire. He was a grubby little centurion, filthy man, but he ends up being the emperor. Why? Well, because God put him there. The least esteemed of men goes into that position of authority for a purpose. He wanted this idiot to write decrees, and he wrote those decrees for 608 to 610. From 608, add 1260. This is when the decree of Phocas proclaimed the Pope as head of all the churches, gave him his temporal power, power over people and land. Add 1260 to 608, you come to 1868. That's when Garibaldi came up from Naples. He pushed the Pope out of Rome, and 2 years later, the Pope in exile lost his temporal power. Oh, he responded to that in 1870. You know what he did? He called the First Vatican Council. You know who the Pope was then? Anyone know who the Pope was? He's the only one who's got a statue in the forecourt of the Vatican today. There's only one statue of a Pope in the forecourt of the Vatican. You know who it is? Pope Pius IX. He ruled the Catholic Church for 38 years. The longest papal reign in history. He was the Pope who, having been evicted from his position of temporal power in 1870, called the First Vatican Council and proclaimed himself, the Pope, as being infallible when speaking ex cathedra. That's why his statue is in the forecourt of the Vatican. He's the man who declared the papacy infallible. So temporal power came to an end in the years 1868 to 1870. 1260 years exactly from 608 to 610 and the decree of focus. Now you might think I'm overemphasizing this. I'm not. You'll see the reason why I'm not a little later on. So here we are. This beast of the earth now comes on the scene. I'm not going to go through all the details that go down to verse 10. That's something you can do in your own time. We're now going to focus on the next phase of papal power. If we come down to verse 11 of Revelation 13, what we read in verse 11, I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and spake as a dragon. And he exerciseth all the power of the first beast before him, and causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. Now, this is where we get the image of the beast, as we're going to see in a minute. The image of the beast is actually the Pope with political power, which is represented symbolically by the beast of the earth, a beast of the sea. Okay, so this second beast, the beast of the earth, is in full support of the former beast. Now, you're going to work this out in your mind. It's not all that hard, as we shall see. Let's have a look at this beast of the earth. Here he is, a lamb-like creature. See that? What does a lamb-like creature suggest to you? What does sheep normally represent? Followers of Christ. You know. Sheep. And this is a religious power, but it's got a lion-like mouth. What does that mean? It's vicious. It's cruel, vicious. So it's a religious power, but it's a political power that's vicious. That's what we're going to find when we come to the beast of the earth and the image of the beast that you can see there sitting behind it. Because it says there, did you read that verse carefully? Verse 12, he exercises all the power of the first beast before him and causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. Now when you go on and you read, let's just read verse 14. And he deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those signs which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast, which had the wound, notice this, which had the wound by a sword and did live. So we know that what's talking about is this beast here. This is the one that rose out of the sea to heal the imperial system, to revive it. So the image of the beast is actually that first system. Now what is that first system? Well, it's the Pope with political power. So the Holy Roman Empire, which is the subject of this beast of the earth, perpetuates papal political power. Does anyone here know at what time in history the papacy was most powerful? What century? Anyone know? It was in the 1200s. And that's the time when the Pope, who was supposed to be reigning in conjunction with the Emperor of the Holy Roman Empire, who was in Germany, right? One or two of those emperors sort of fell out with the Pope. Now, that's not a great idea. And there was one emperor who fell out with the Pope, so the Pope excommunicated him. Now, because, of course, he can't really continue to be emperor when he's excommunicated from the church because his people all go to church, he had to come crawling to the Pope. And he came in wintertime, and the Pope made him wait out in the snow for 4 days before he had an audience with him. Now, you can imagine what the outcome of that was. A very humiliated emperor went home with his tail between his legs. The Pope, in that era of time, was the most powerful being on earth. That was the height of papal power. That's what came out of this Holy Roman Empire, where initially there was an equality between the two horns, the Pope and the Emperor. It turned out that the papacy became all-powerful. Never did it have more power in history than in that era. So you get the idea? This is what Revelation 13 is about. Made an image of the beast. The Pope with extreme political power. So this is what the creature looks like. And you go on, it describes this beast in verse 11. He had two horns like a lamb, but he spake as a dragon. You know, he's got this lion-like, dragon-like mouth that speaks forth great things. So this is the imagery of the beast of the earth. And it's based in Central Europe, isn't it? Its political power is not coming from the Eastern emperors in Constantinople. Its political power is now coming from the emperor in Central Europe. Now, what's happened here? Well, I'm going to show you a little later on what happened. Because in actual fact, Rome fell out with the Eastern emperors over idolatry. But that's the story of the plucking up of the three horns of Daniel 7. So we'll come to that later on. Now, this was Charlemagne's empire. There's Aachen, by the way, where that cathedral is, see? Here in Germany. And he had a pretty big empire. He was the son of Pepin, who originally, of course, was down here in France. And in 814, when he died, this was the extent of the Carolingian empire. This is the beast of the earth. Now, this beast, you read, had two horns. See, it's got two horns, like a lamb. Well, there's an imperial horn. That was the political power based in Central Europe under Constantine, Charlemagne, I should say. And you have the papal horn here in Rome. Okay, so there's the two horns of this beast of the earth. So let's just have a quick look then at what this passage says. Revelation 13 verse 11 says another beast. As we've said, it's the Holy Roman Empire, the next stage of papal ascendancy in Europe. Coming up out of the earth, it rose up out of Central Europe based on the empire of Charlemagne. It was not confined to the Mediterranean area, which is where the beast of the sea was located. It had two horns. There's a religious power, the Pope, and there's a military power, political power, the Emperor. It's like a lamb. It claimed to be Christian. It's called the Holy Roman Empire, but there wasn't too much holy about it. It spake as a dragon, the symbol of paganized military imperialism. Revelation 13:12 says, before him, Brother Thomas translates it, and so does the Diaglot, in his presence. So the first beast of verse 1 was not destroyed. What remained was the papacy and a Catholicized 10 horns, out of which arose the Holy Roman Empire. It says, the earth and them which dwell therein. The papal alliance with Charlemagne resulted in the whole of Europe. That's the earth here. And they that dwelt therein, the whole of Europe, submitted to papal political power, namely the beast of the sea of verse 5. And it says that this new beast, this beast of the earth, caused all to worship the first beast. That is, he gave political and religious power to the Pope. When you move on to verse 14, you read, he made this image to the beast. The word here is icon. And it combines the ideas of representation and manifestation. It refers to the papacy. Here's our little image down here again. It refers to the papal system with political power. But let's read verse 15. Verse 15, he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. You know what that's about? It's about the fact that the emperors of the Holy Roman Empire used their power to brutalize anyone who wouldn't bow down to the Pope. That's what it's about. This word power, in fact, two words in the Greek, didomai autos, means He was allowed to give. So God allowed this power to give to the papacy the means to suppress its enemies. That's what it's about. HRE gave political and ecclesiastical life to the papacy by compelling men and nations to worship what's called the image of the beast, the Pope with political power. And as many as would not worship the image should be killed. And papal decrees became law enforced by the sword of the emperor. Thus the papacy had unchallengeable temporal power. Very, very important phase in the history of this system. But then we read this in verse 18. In fact, verse 17 talks about how even trade was forbidden to those. You couldn't buy anything if you did not bow down to this system in that time. But verse 18 says this. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. And his number is 666. Has anybody seen the latest video coming out from a Christadelphian source that says that this 666 is the sign of ISIS? A flag of ISIS? You haven't seen that. Well, someone sent it to me. I didn't want to see it either. I won't mention any names. It's not about mentioning names. We have got some idiotic things going on. We've now got people in our community saying that the symbol of ISIS, which you see on their black flag, this is the 666. And I watched about 3 minutes of this video and I'd had enough. But what I did hear was this, that this particular brother said, you know, I was never satisfied with the explanations that were given in Christadelphia about 666. But this sounds, you know, this sounds pretty good to me. Well, that was about where I switched it off. Because it's absolute rubbish. Now, we want to talk about 666. It's the number of a man. What man? Well, the papal man. No question about that. It's a papal man. So let's give some proof, shall we? The title, Vicar of the Son of God, in Latin is Vicarius Filii Dei. It has a numerical value of 666. Latinos, which means the Latin kingdom, has a numerical value of 666 in Greek. Okay, this is the area referred to. In AD 666, using the Gregorian calendar, which is quite fitting, the Pope declared Latin to be the religious tongue of the papacy. In Hebrew, Rome is spelt in Latin, Romith, and has a numerical value of 666. The Romans only used six numerals in their numbering system. Of course, we use them on the hands of a clock, don't we? Added together, they total 666. The original name of Rome was Saturnia, meaning the city of Saturn. This secret name was revealed only to initiates of the Chaldean mysteries. In Chaldee, it was spelt Stur, S-T-U-R. Its numerical value is 666. At the height of pagan Roman's power, Nero Caesar was the emperor. His name, written in Hebrew, has a value of 666. St. Peter's Cathedral in Rome is said to be 666 feet long. I was there in 2005, I didn't get to step it out. Would have been nice, wouldn't it? In the New Testament, the words for wealth, euphoria, and tradition, paradosis, are the only two nouns out of 2,000 in the New Testament which have a numerical value of 666. Now, if you had to choose two words about the corruptions of that church and the way it goes about its business, what would you say? Wealth and tradition. I don't think there's any doubt that wisdom tells you that this is the number of the papal system, the number of a man. And that system is about to meet its end. Armageddon begins that process, but it will take another 40 years to destroy it. So let's follow what's going to happen, because you see, historically we had a beast of the sea and a beast of the earth. Guess what? As Brother Thomas correctly points out in Eureka, they're going to be revived. Because in Revelation 17, the beast upon which the woman sits has some of the characteristics of the beast of the sea of Revelation 13. Have a look at it. Revelation 17. Revelation 17, we read this. Verse 1. And there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials and talked with me, saying, Come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore which sitteth upon many waters. That sounds like seas to me. With whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, the inhabitants of the earth have made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-coloured beast full of names of blasphemy. That's chapter 13, verse 1. Remember that? Full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. That's chapter 13, verse 1, etc. So you see, the beast upon which the woman that Christ is going to destroy sits is based upon the beast of the sea of Revelation chapter 13. So what there's going to be at the time of Armageddon is the revival of the beast of the sea. Now, do you think that that's possible? Well, it's not only possible, it's going to happen. It's already beginning to happen, that the Pope is going to regain massive political power in Europe, and I believe that will come on the back of the coming Great Depression. At which time, by the way, brethren, we'll be at the judgment seat of Christ. That's going to come on the back of the Great Depression, when the European Union collapses under the weight of its own debt load. European Union will divide up. The more wealthy countries to the north will hive off and end up in the pocket of Russia, basically. The southern European nations, and they'll have to refine it down. You know, little Luxembourgs and people like that, they're going to have to disappear. There'll be 10 of them, and they'll all be south of the Rhine and the Danube, which is the territory of the old Roman Empire, and they'll all be subservient to the Pope because they'll need him. He'll have massive power. You know what year I think that's going to happen? Based on what we're going to talk about this afternoon? 2018. I'll give you the proof for that later. Now, we know the story here, don't we? In Revelation 17, we read that the ten horns, the European nations of the latter days, received power for 30 years or 1 hour with the beast. That's the period. The last 30 years of the 40. That's the period. But you see, the beginning is the restoration of the beast of the sea, the Pope with papal, with political power in Europe. There'll be a restoration of the beast of the sea. But it won't stay that way. Because you see, this will depend on the power in Constantinople at the time, who will be Gog. Just like it was in the days of old, where the power of the Pope in the West depended on the Emperor in the East in Constantinople. But when they fell out, he had to go somewhere else. He had to go to Central Europe to get political support, military support. Going to happen all over again. Because you see, when Gog is installed in Constantinople, and has to be there before they can advance into the Middle East, when Gog's installed in Constantinople, they will give political clout to the Pope in the West, just like it happened in history. But when Gog is destroyed in the events of Armageddon, where does the Pope go then? Central Europe. So you have your next phase, the revival of the beast of the earth. Now, I don't need to tell you that the European Union is all about the restoration of the Holy Roman Empire. That's why the French had Charlemagne on the back of their first euro coin. That's why on the lapels of all the people that are involved with the European Parliament, there's what? The visage of Charlemagne. They are rebuilding the Holy Roman Empire. They're not going to succeed before Armageddon, but they will succeed after. Because you see, the historical pattern of the past is going to be done all over again. It'll go through the same phases all over again. You want to know about this? Read Eureka. It's there. You've got to read it carefully, but read Eureka. It's there. So tomorrow, later on today, we're going to have a look at the judgments that began on this system in 1789. And we're going to follow that through to the judgments that will culminate in 2060. So there we've got just a little bit about Revelation chapter 13, which I think you can see the relevance of in relation to ourselves.